Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Welcome to Wireless, a series all about radio, broadcast on the first Monday of every month on Flirt FM 101.3 here in Galway and on www.flirtfm.ie. I'm Brian Green, not John Walsh, and I'll be with you for the next hour. John is recovering at home and will be back next month. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, analogue and digital broadcasting, community, regional and national broadcasters, niche broadcasting, pirate radio, podcasting, radio ownership and radio's history and future prospects. Coming up on the March edition of Wireless. A gem from the Wireless archive, Christian Community Radio are taken off air and complains to the Gay Byrne Hour about anti-Catholic bias. I speak with Gavin Byrne, the chief technical guy at Near Media Co-op, about web technology behind the co-op, their extensive use of WordPress, and the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland funded archive.ie project, which is now online. I met with the founder and creator of charity radio, Mark O'Toole, and the fascinating story of how he came to set up the station that was then called Radioactive and is now called Easy Radio. And celebrating World Radio Day on February 13th this year, I headed along to Coolmine Amateur Radio Rally and spoke to some radio hams about the future of radio. That interview includes a chat with Mike Wright, who tells me about his broadcast engineering days on Radio Caroline North from 1966 to 1968. A jam-packed radio hour about radio. Put the kettle on, put your feet up, and for the next 60 minutes, stay right here on Flirt FM.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Our first item from the Wireless archive section is absolutely fascinating. It comes from 1987, exact date unknown. It's RTE Radio 1, the Gay Byrne Hour, and Gay Byrne is talking to Gerry O'Mahony, who is a director of the Christian Communications Centre in Merrion Square in Dublin. Mr. O'Mahony, who is a solicitor, ran a pirate radio station from the Merrion Square address, and it had just been taken off air due to complaints of interference to the BBC. We joined the Gay Byrne Hour.
Have you a license to operate your radio station?
I am officially authorised, Mr. Byrne, as the department knows.
No, you are not.
I say I am, and I stand over that, and if you'd like to make the inquiries...
We certainly will. We certainly will. You, who officially authorised you?
Before going into that, the complaint that I made this morning.
No, who officially authorised you?
I didn't hear your programme this morning.
That's right.
But I've had several phone calls.
Yes.
You're complaining about your anti-Catholic bias.
Oh, I see.
I'm very deliberately telling you what I heard this morning.
Yes, well, perhaps you should have heard the radio programme before you commit yourself to what was said on the air, because...
I know, I'm simply repeating what I hear, because you repeat what you hear.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I repeat what I hear, that you're interfering, your radio station is interfering with other people's enjoyment, and you do not have a licence to operate this station.
Which I repudiate, in the circumstances.
And well, who gave you... Well, could you tell us who gave you the licence, Mr. O'Mahony?
I stated positively that we're officially authorised...
Well, by whom? By whom?
Up to you to find out, and the RTE can find out. Now,
who allocated you the frequency, Mr. O'Mahony?
Don't drag a red herring over the situation.
Who allocated you a frequency, Mr. O'Mahony?
What I was told was, you're discussed this morning at what you heard about someone's BBC One programme being interfered with by a Catholic radio and a Catholic programme.
No, that's what the person said to us, that it was a Catholic radio station. Yes.
That's reported to me.
We have complained about other pirate radio stations and all of them together. All other unlicensed radio stations we have complained about on this programme again and again. And I'd love to know who licensed you to operate your radio station.
I've stated my situation.
Yeah, but you haven't told me who licensed you.
Look, I've stated and I stand over that. And if the authorities feel I'm wrong, it's up to them to take the necessary proceedings.
Very good. Indeed it is,
and we
sir.
Told them that.
Indeed it
and
is.
Incidentally...
But it's odd, since you're in the legal profession, that you're actually breaking the law.
Oh, I'm not. Simply state that I am officially authorised, and I stand over that. And
well, I mean, it must be the department who officially authorised you. It must be the department.
Well, that's a matter for you to find out.
Well, why can't you tell me?
It's over to you.
But why can't you tell me?
Well, look, get on to the department. Let the department deal with it then, if you don't wish to do so.
Well, all right then, but it would be easier for you to tell us who authorised you.
Let's come back now to the main issue. You see, you're bringing in a red herring.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about a pirate radio station which is operating without a licence, and you're interfering with other people. That's what I'm talking about.
Because,
and you're not the only one.
Simply because they are people, and it appears from the calls I got this morning, people are coming on to your programme complaining about a Catholic
That's
radio
how they
station.
Described it.
That's how they described it.
Well, that's the only way they could identify it.
Well, isn't it wonderful now that there are people listening into that, and we wish there'd be more.
No, they're not listening. No, they're not listening into it. They are hearing it in spite of themselves, and that's the only identification they have of it. We'll make further inquiries, Mr. O'Mahony, from the department.
By the way,
thank you for joining us.
All right.
Thank you very much indeed. We will indeed. Good morning.
Fascinating radio recording to hear Gay Byrne on RT Radio 1 grill a pirate radio operator who claimed to have license to broadcast but wouldn't say where that had come from, dating back to 1987. The station was Christian Community Radio, which had a decent signal, and I was able to hear it out on the north side in Bayside, about 7 or 8 miles out from the city centre, and probably had the worst audio quality of any radio station on air at the time or since. It was really, really bad audio quality. On FM, it was received out on the north side. That's the archive piece on Wireless on Flirt FM.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
In October, I caught up with Gavin Byrne. He's the techie CTO kind of guy at Near Media Co-op. It was at WordCamp in DCU. I spoke to him about their exciting project funded by the BAI, archive.ie, and also how a media co-op is using WordPress exclusively. I began by asking him what he took from the day's conference.
I did particularly like the AMP workshop. So that's the making the mobile pages that are cached into Google and things like that, just for faster response times for sites. And also, I think what appeals to me actually is that you get your little page preview in that little carousel that now appears in Google search results. So yeah, I originally sort of dismissed it a lot because it's like yet another version of your website you need to have, which might be a bit too much, but they still seem to be working on it and coming along a bit. So I might be looking at it or deploying our whole podcasting site is all via WordPress. So WordPress is quite handy for that because the way it handles RSS feeds and everything. So it's very useful for us. And because we have to train so many people how to use the podcast to upload their own content, WordPress is really nice and friendly on the back end of things. So it's just like, yeah, finding out where we can go to make that a little bit better, where we can use WordPress to make for future websites and what we're doing in the project. That's kind of what I'm here for.
Is Near exclusively WordPress across radio, TV and internet?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, all the sites are WordPress based. We used to use Joomla, but again, the back end of that wasn't as user friendly. So just it's a lot easier for me to train in people how to use WordPress and set up user accounts and deploy them very quickly and easily. So yeah, anytime we're making new sites, because I have to make a lot of new sites when new projects come on. So I'm currently making one for an education project that we're just doing. So it just needs a little microsite, very quick and easy to deploy something in WordPress.
And the choice of WordPress, is it because of its open source, or what's driving the choice for use?
Yeah, definitely. I like the fact that it's open source. I think almost any system that you're familiar with is always going to be the best system. So that's a large part of it, because I'm very familiar with WordPress. So we don't have to go outside to anyone else. We can do it all ourselves in-house. But mostly it's because it's very easy for me to teach other people to use it. It's if you can send webmail, basically, you can write a page in WordPress. So it's very simple.
There was a time, as you mentioned there, Joomla was king, and then Drupal kind of came into its own, and particularly in the NGO and charity sector here in Ireland. But WordPress has made its notch and it's kept its place. Is there any signs of something else coming along the tracks, or is WordPress the only show in town, really, and it's not kind of twilight at all?
I haven't really looked into too much else myself now, because again, it would mean, if we did change to something else, it would mean retraining several hundred people who currently have access to the WordPress site as something new. So I wouldn't take any decision to move to something else lightly. So hopefully WordPress stays strong, keeps developing, and we can stick with it.
You mentioned several hundred people having access, which is what you get when you've got several hundred volunteers, and you have to have a division of labour and make them put up their own shows or other people's shows directly before they do their own show. How is it for security? You find that you make everybody editors or some level that you've got, and then there's no messing and everything runs swimmingly fine?
Everyone is down at an editor level. Seems to go okay. I'm sure it probably will cause problems eventually, but so far it's okay. Keep regular backups of everything, so if something does get damaged or rotten, we can replace it easily enough. But again, the websites are kept quite compartmentalized, so there's multiple installs of WordPress, so people would only have access to one site will only have access to that, so they're not going to be able to change some of the more important sections of the website as well, so if they have changes.
Yeah, another enormous project you did was archive.ie, which was BAI funded, but it's tapping into the wealth of audio that Near has recorded over the last 25 years now, is it?
Yes, although on this one, the funding that we got from the Broadcasting Authority was focused on just one program for one specific span of time. That was the Northside Today program, which was one of our flagship shows, our magazine program. A large part of that, using that WordPress for that, again, makes it easy to search, upload the audio content to it. Had to do a bit of customization on it because we were using the Dublin Core system for adding the metadata, which is an internationally recognized standard. So we got a lot of advice from the Digital Repository Ireland on that project. But again, a lot of that was making the back end user friendly, because we were relying on a lot of our own sort of volunteer staff to add data entry into it. So I needed like a form that they could fill out that adds in all these fields. So things like producer, presenter, date, geographic scale, what time scale it's relevant to, all these little bits of information that are required to meet the Dublin Core standards.
One question I asked at an earlier session in the business track here at WordCamp 2017 in Dublin was, let's say a typical hour-long piece of video or audio, and let's say you want to reference the 25th minute or the 38th minute or the 43rd minute, is it possible with your archiver to pinpoint particular things that people said in the whole piece, like, and kind of chapter point to it, or is there a transcript of the hour or anything like that?
No, we didn't go into that much detail on them. Now, it is broken up that it isn't full programs that are put up. We have taken out each interview is in its own entry taken from the program, so we go through, see which interviews were worth archiving, because a lot of stuff isn't, so because a lot of content that goes out on air is usually things like, oh, we've got this event coming up and this is what's going to be added, which isn't really that
dates
very quickly, so you have to go through a large amount of listening through all that content and finding what's relevant, and then going through it, listening to it, trying to weed out the metadata. So we weren't doing full transcriptions, but we were pulling out metadata, what would make a suitable tag for this keywords and things like that we can put on onto the entry.
Now that you've done it, and you will most likely get involved and do it again, is there'll be things you've learned from the first time that you'll do a different way the second time?
I think we say that I would like to add things like more sort of geotagging, so that you would be able to view on a map audio content that's relevant to different areas around northeast Dublin. So I think that would be the next sort of field I'd want to add. I think would just be a bit more interesting way for people to find the information. Because when you're presented with just a gigantic archive of content, you're like, what do I look for? I guess I can type that in, but you're kind of like, it's very hard to figure out what's in there. So and it's just finding interesting ways to display that information, making interesting ways for people to discover stuff that they might be interested in.
That's the archive, but you also have what must be a bigger repository of just the Near FM podcasts. And I always like to remember and state the statistic, but you were the first radio station in Ireland to podcast.
Yes, so I think that was, yeah, August 2004 was when we started podcasting. And I think like podcasting as a standard only got developed that year. So yeah, luckily I saw the potential of that quite early and got in there. So it was another 3 years before other radio stations followed suit, I believe. But
the first program was Encore, wasn't it?
Yes, Encore, which is sort of a weekly program at the time, which would pick out some of the highlights of interviews and things that were on different programs during the week. So it was ideal for podcasts. In general, we don't delete anything from our podcast now. Those very early days, we don't have online at the moment, but I think we have at least 6 years worth of podcast content there, and everything, just once it's up, it stays up. It isn't time limited, it just stays there. And so it's also a huge amount of content on the current podcast. So in a way that it's probably not really a podcast anymore, in that it's just a large, it's more of a sort of a listen again feature, because I don't think people are really subscribing to the RSS feed, because we're putting up about 10 different pieces of audio every day, so you'd kind of be swamped. So we're going forward, we'll probably be breaking things down into category-based feeds, and we may just have a separate site that we'll call Podcast, and we'll just put more noteworthy programming there, or maybe even just stuff that's designed specifically just to be a podcast, not for broadcast. And then leave the sort of stuff that's just like catch up, listen again stuff, we go on what the site is as it currently is.
And music, are you using Mixcloud or anything for the music shows?
Yeah, that's right, because of copyright reasons. We do have a deal with Imro, allows you to use 30 seconds, but that's kind of impractical to put into practice because of that means we can't apply a Creative Commons license to content if we have music in there, because obviously we don't have the rights. So I generally just tell everyone to cut all music out. So yeah, if music program wasn't to go up, we use Mixcloud, but there's limitations there as well, because one program we were putting on Mixcloud was a program called Jazz Profiles, which plays classic jazz music. But what he does on his program is he picks one specific artist and profiles them in 1 week. But Mixcloud has a limitation in that you can't put up multiple tracks for the same artist in a single upload, because it looks like you're just sharing a complete album in that case. So they kept blocking that program. So Mixcloud does have its limitations in that regard. But as a general way of like uploading music, as long as you put the track listing in, it's a way for us to allow people to listen to music programming, because that's a large part of Near FM, is the highly specialized music programming that we produce.
Last question, is there anything with WordPress in particular that you're innovating into the co-op in the near future, or that you'd like to do in the future?
I'm really interested in where we can go with AR. So if you can like hold the camera up on your phone and move it around like the area, and you can see if we have any audio content for specific geo points around. So like we have like projects all about Fairview Park, programs about that, loads of programs about the local area, that like very specific local programming that you don't get on other radio stations. And yeah, if you do, again, just finding interesting ways for people to find that content.
I can see what you're doing there. You're thinking ahead and putting geo into the archive so that in the future, people with their goggles on will be able to...
Yes, because I think AR is potential to take off. I think that might be one that will happen.
Gavin Byrne from Near Media Co-op, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Gavin Byrne of Near Media Co-op, Ireland's longest running community radio station. And as was said, they're the first radio station in Ireland to be podcasting back in August 2004. Amazing.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
You can also get this programme as a podcast. Go along to our blog, wirelessflirt.wordpress.com, where all the back copies of the programme are available and some interesting articles about radio down through the years. You're with Wireless Brian Green in for John Walsh on the March edition of the programme. February 13th every year is UNESCO World Radio Day. This February, I went along to Coolmine Radio Rally. It's an amateur radio club, and at radio rallies, if you're not familiar with them, a lot of new and old equipment, some call it junk, is on offer and for sale, and it's a great meeting point for amateurs across the country. So I got to meet with four people. You'll hear from Justin Bean, Lara Wright, Mike Wright, and Rory Hinchy. And an interesting perspective that the experimenters and radio amateurs have on where radio is in 2018 and where it is going.
UNESCO World Radio Day, 13th of February 2018, and we're talking radio. And is radio still important? I'm with a ham operator, and it's a ham operator is a amateur radio operator, and his name is Justin Bean. How are you doing?
Hello, Brian.
Is radio important today?
Yes, I think it's very important today.
Of course, you would say that, but now you have to back that up with evidence. Why?
Okay. Well, it is a method of communication which doesn't rely on the internet. And if radio will continue with battery power, if telephones break down, if the internet breaks down, radio is still there. It uses radio waves that can be bounced. We can use batteries as a power supply.
We think of radio in a first world kind of sense of entertainment and music and something to keep us occupied while we're in the commute in the car. But there's, what, four-fifths of the world who rely on radio for much more than that, for information and availability of commodities and prices and things.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also in major disaster areas, where in America you'll have hurricanes, you'll have tsunamis, you'll have floods in India, and radio will be a big part of getting relief work, relief supplies to the people in need.
And is it amateur radio guys that are keeping the flame lit in terms of experimenting and bringing in new digital modes onto the old analog modes on radio?
I would say yes. It is. The amateur people are very involved in that worldwide, and not only in Ireland. There's a lot of there's new modes coming on all the time. Some very highly qualified and intelligent people are actually inventing new modes on a daily basis, and they're then being released to the population, which are using them in a good way.
Is there any growth in the kind of ham radio clubs around Ireland?
I would say not. Yeah, there are some new members coming in. You'll find that a lot of older people are there. More the younger people are more internet radio rather than people of my age group.
Last question, are you picking up much about this software defined radio stuff? Are you experimenting with that on the receive side?
Okay, have used it once or twice. Very interesting, very good. We worked a special event station for Marconi Day last year from the Martello Tower in Howth, the museum out there. And yeah, that's a software defined radio where we both transmit and receive, and made a lot of good contacts with the software defined radio. It is the way forward, I think, for this type of communication.
That'd be the hurdy-gurdy museum up in Howth, just off Main Street. Look it up on the internet. Marconi Day, I think, is in April.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's April every year, and there's a special event station there every year, EI0MAR.
Give us your own call sign, and thanks very much, Justin Bean.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm EI3CTB.
Over and out. QRT, thank you very much. World Radio Day from UNESCO, and I'm talking with Lara Wright. How are you doing?
How are you, Brian?
Good. Radio, when did you get into it?
I kind of grew up with it because my dad worked in RTE. So from like the day I was born, I was brought up weekends in RTE. I was a sound engineer in there. So I kind of had an interest from it from an early age, because it didn't feel like work, because he enjoyed it. And I kind of like going in and seeing all the buttons and lights and things like that. So that's how I got into it.
So you're doing what now in radio?
I am the head of station sound in iRadio, based in Athlone. So I look after all the promos, imaging, jingles. We don't run standard imaging like liners and sweepers between songs. We brand every single song in our library, so where it's got the imaging built into the start of the song, so the music in theory should flow, so there's no break. So I produce all of that.
Does that make them a bit over kind of identing if they're in every song?
No, because I think if you listen to any radio station anyway, they'll have a sweeper in between, or they should anyway, because it's what differentiates between listening to, say, an iTunes or a Spotify playlist. You're getting the station brand out there, which is, you know, you've got to kind of keep that at people's, because the way people are consuming music, particularly music radio, because everything is so accessible with YouTube, Spotify, they can listen to what they want, when they want. So you have to kind of keep the brand alive by mentioning it every 3 minutes.
Can I exploit this great opportunity? And let's say you're a doctor and I had a sore foot. I'm going to ask you a question in that light. I'm here in front of somebody who does radio imaging, and I have got this pet hate of this kind of swish, bang, wallop, stutter, stutter, stutter type of imaging that particularly 2FM are taken to a degree that really is annoying. What would you say to that?
That's a good one, because I think it depends on the station as well. And 2FM are trying to obviously reduce the age of their demographic, because they particularly in the Dublin market anyway, that kind of became a little bit irrelevant with the commercials, you know, miles
6% in the general area.
So the crash bang wallop thing, I do get what you mean, but I think for a CHR station it is kind of not, I suppose it's the norm globally, you know, and it's just that sound where it kids these days, and even like I'm 36 now, so going back 15 years, you know, everything is fast paced, so that's why they do the stutters and the stammers. So yes, it can be overkill sometimes, but I think if it works, I wouldn't do it on every single song that I do. Like, there has to be a balance there as well, particularly like if, because of the way that JNLR is, it's such a vast age range, like, you know, 15 to 35, like what I liked when I was 15 is a lot different to what I like now. And, you know, I find myself listening to RT Radio 1 more. I'm turning into my dad as I'm getting older.
Did you hear BBC Radio 1, Vintage Radio 1?
I heard bits and pieces of it. I had planned on recording it the whole weekend, but I kind of dipped in and out of it because there was a lot of stuff that wasn't really relevant to me, like going back to the 60s. I wouldn't have really had that much interest, but I enjoyed things like more from my era when I was like a teenager or in my early 20s, listening to like Mark and Laird and Chris Moyles and, you know, people like that. I also did enjoy the Kenny Everett bits because, you know, way ahead of his time. And when I think of how easy it is for me to edit stuff on a multi-track digital editor, when he was doing all that on, you know, tapes and dubbing and redubbing and, you know, doing all the different voices himself, he must have spent 24 hours a day working on this.
He spent all week just to get that Sunday show together, and wow, did it sound great. Did you hear the imaging of Vintage itself? Wasn't it amazing?
I really liked the fact that they brought John Wells, the American voice, over, who was the voice in the 90s of Radio 1 and 2FM in the late 90s, and the fact that they got him to do all the stuff again, I thought was really good, because it did give it that kind of nostalgic feel where if you grew up listening to that, it brought you straight back to, you know, those days.
In the words of Radio Gaga by Queen, yet to have its final hour, but are their kids gone at this stage, or have they just been stolen by radio stations like iRadio?
I don't know if they're gone. Like, I think there'll always be that element of surprise where you can just turn on the radio and you hear a song and you're like, oh, you know, I haven't heard that in, you know, 6 months. Or like the biggest problem is, I think, the way that the media has gone with the YouTube and the Spotify, and like if I want to listen to whatever song it is, I can just pick up my phone and it's there instantly. I don't have to wait, you know, 2 hours to hear it. Whereas back when I was growing up, if I wanted to hear whatever was in, say, the top 20, I'd have to wait until Tony Fenton was doing the Hotline, you know, at 7 o'clock, and you'd get those 10, 15 songs in that hour. Whereas now you can just pick it up on your phone and get it there instantly.
And is radio grappling with that kind of, what do we do now, kind of, that's the way of the world?
I think it is, and that's why you see an awful lot of stations putting so much time and effort into their social media, like with Facebook and videos, and it's not just about radio anymore, it is really across the board, like all sorts of new media, with the likes of, you know, bringing bands in, recording videos, having them either record and, you know, play out as live, or doing a live recording and then having the video on Facebook and trying to get that interaction with people. But the good thing about it is that it's instant reaction. You're not waiting on the JNLRs every 3 months. You can see what sort of traction you're getting instantly. Like,
but the platforms like Spotify, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, they've got the monetization sewn up. There's nothing in it for the radio to actually make money about putting content, their content, their original comedy content, into social.
Yeah, and I remember recently posting something on Facebook myself, which I thought was a bit weird. I think it was Capital in London. I think they were doing, it was either the Spotify chart or the iTunes chart or something. And I was kind of like, why are they basically, I know they're generating revenue off it, but they're also advertising what their main competitor is, you know, like, so. But a friend of mine who's a program controller in a Dublin radio station came back and he was like, if it's revenue, we just need to make the money, so we'll sell to whoever, you know.
Yeah. So listen, the best of luck in the future in iRadio. And any chance you go back on amateur airwaves?
Well, it's 21 years now since I did the license, 97, so I think I was 15 or 16 at the time, and I don't think I've picked up a microphone since then, but I'm sure someday I probably will. Like, I've got gear at home, but I live in an apartment, so it's difficult to get aerials up, but you know, I do have a Yaesu handheld and an iCom mobile rig there, so maybe someday I will get back on.
Thanks very much, Larry.
No problem. Thanks.
For World Radio Day, I'm with Mike Wright. Mike is an engineer of many a year, back through the decades with RTE, and he's telling me he started back in the 60s. Tell us, where did you start?
I started with Radio Caroline North, which was the Caroline ship off the Isle of Man. It came on the air at Easter 64, and I joined it in 66. So I was there from 66 to 68, so I was there half of its lifetime. It was on the air for 4 years, and I was there for the last 2 years of it. They had a south ship as well, which was off Frinton in Essex, near Harwich. And so between the two ships, we covered the bulk of the British Isles, you know.
I've heard all the documentaries. I wasn't there the first time round myself. Just missed it, and I would have loved to have been there. But can you answer me this, because I've never really understood this, from the way they tell it through history, and they have a great story, a backstory to tell. But did they distinguish between South and North, or did they just say, we're Caroline, and they kind of...
No, they did. There was Radio Caroline South and Radio Caroline North, and there were different programmes, different disc jockeys. You had, and then the advertising now, like every day, we used to get a 10.5-inch spool of tape from London, from the office, for each day of the week. And the ads would be broken up into 15-minute segments. So they start off at 6 a.m. in the morning till 8 o'clock in 15-minute segments. And they were what we call the national ads. They were like Coca-Cola, Findus Fish Fingers, you know, big companies like that that went out on both stations. Then we had local advertising, which was on Cart or Red Live, which would have been casino car sales of Old Swan and Liverpool and places like that. That would have been local advertising to the region that we were covering, you know. So we had a radius of about 150 to 200 miles from the Isle of Man, and the same with the Caroline South ship, you know. So we were nearly down as far as Birmingham, you know.
When Irish people heard Caroline, they were hearing Caroline North. Yeah. And what sort of kilowatts were you pushing in those days?
When I joined it, it was 10 kilowatts. And shortly after I joined, in late 66, we upped the power to 20 kilowatts. Now, Caroline South, again, started off with 10 kilowatts in 64, but in late 64, Radio London came along, which was an American-backed operation that anchored a mile away from Caroline South with 50 kilowatts. So they took a lot of the audience away from Caroline because, well, they were a much slicker station because they had this American style about them. And they had the much higher power as well, so they put a far greater, stronger signal into London and the south of England and also onto the continent. So Caroline South eventually, in 66, upped the power to 50 kilowatts to compete with our nearest neighbour, you know. And we only went to 20 kilowatts when we changed frequency because, again, we were originally on 199 metres, right, on the medium wave, which was the top end of the medium wave. Radio London was in roughly in the middle, around 266 metres. When Caroline upped the power to 50 kilowatts, they moved frequency to be close on the dial to Radio London. And we then moved frequency as well to be close to Caroline South because we only transmitted from 6 in the morning till 8 in the evening. But Caroline South was 24 hours a day. And with radio propagation, as it got dark, the signal from the South ship travelled much further and you could hear it here in Ireland and in Dublin and the north of England. So there was no point in the two of us being on, you know, so that's how that came about.
It's difficult operating on the water, away from land, and the surety and safety of... was there dangerous moments?
Yes, well, of all the ships, the one that I was on, the MV Caroline, which was originally the Fredericia, which was a small Danish passenger ship to Danish islands, it was about 800 or 900 tons and about 200 foot long, and it was the largest of all this, of all those offshore stations, you know. So we had a decent sort of ship, where the likes of Radio Scotland now, that was on an old Irish light vessel, which was only 100 foot long, a very small one, you know, and that used to bop around the water like nobody's business. Where we all had our own cabins as well because it was a small passenger ship. Caroline South was a smaller ship, but you had to share cabins and bunks as well with different people, depending on what time you were on at. But no, our ship was fairly stable, and we were anchored in Ramsey Bay, so we were shielded from the westerly winds. And there was a few bad storms when I was there. The worst one, trying to remember now when it would have been, I think it would have been early 67, January 67, when the highest gales at that time ever recorded on the Irish Sea was a force 12, which was a hurricane. And part of our aerial system broke and we were off the air for 3 days with it. But that was the worst weather we ever had. But you couldn't do anything. You were being tossed all over the place. You couldn't cook anything even because pots and things wouldn't stay in the cooker, you know, so you couldn't sleep because you were rolling up and down in the bunk or the bed, you know. So,
do you listen to Caroline North on 1368 for the retro weekends, the memory weekends?
Yes, sometimes from Manx Radio, yes, I have heard that, and it has been pretty good, you know. And it was good to see the present day Caroline getting a license, albeit only fairly low power. But whether it'll be a success or not, I do not know. If they kept the format of the Caroline North thing that the Manx Radio thing were doing, I'd say it would be a huge success. But they seem to want to go with a more modern type of formatting of music and stuff like that. And for that reason, they're going to sound just the same as any other local radio station, you know. And they all sound the same. It doesn't matter where you go on the dial. You can't tell one from the other, you know, because they're all playing more or less the same music. And they all sound very alike.
I think we're being shifted out of here for my final question then. And I think I know where this is going, but they're all sounding the same. What should they do to differentiate?
It's hard to know, really. I really don't know. You see, they're chasing... In the Caroline thing wasn't chasing money, you know. They're all chasing money now, and there's too many of them because the pot isn't big enough, you know. In the days of Caroline, it was done because there were no music stations that we know of today. And it certainly changed broadcasting in Europe. But I really don't know where it'll go from here, you know. I can't see them all succeeding. They're all owned by one or two, certainly in the UK anyway, one or two companies. And for that reason, it doesn't give them any competition between each other to make them sound better than the fella next door, you know.
Mike Wright, thank you very much for your time, and happy World Radio Day.
And thank you too.
World Radio Day 2018, and I'm with Rory Hinchy. Hi, Rory.
Good afternoon, Brian.
When did you first get involved in radio?
Well, my first involvement in radio has been through many varieties and guises. It was initially in looking into community radio back in the late 1980s, and around the same time I was just finishing up with college and got involved with amateur radio, which is an interesting outlook. I knew very little about it at the time, but it gives an opportunity for ordinary individuals to operate their own transmitters, receivers on various different frequencies, both locally and far and worldwide.
Is radio suffering an image problem? In terms of, you know, it fitting in and being important in the world that we're in. I'll tell a little story about how I know you, and you would have brought me into the world of the World Wide Web in 1994 with HTML and servers and all that kind of stuff. That's now 24 years old, that stuff, and it's got Spotify and YouTube and everything, and radio is kind of less important to the kids nowadays. Has it got a problem fitting in?
Radio is facing a changing dilemma. As you rightly described there, the world of radio as was known in the late 1980s has changed, both from a broadcasting perspective, where everybody listened to it on a fairly regular basis for their entertainment, their music radio. These days we have the ease of hard disk type media, memory players, you know, where you're not actually needing to tune into anything. You've also got the Spotify versions of things, but even getting people interested in amateur radio can be quite challenging because it's not seen as so exciting. Remember, back in the day in the late 1980s, early 1990s, mobile telephony wasn't so common. You didn't have your phone to be able to ring someone up. So being able to have a walkie-talkie or a CB radio to talk to your friends or to talk to your wife or whatever was a very useful tool. That particular interest in using radio to talk to people around the world is no longer there, because you can use the internet by email, by blogs. All that connectivity is happening in a different way. In terms of broadcast radio, so that's where change occurs there. In terms of every form of radio, though, it turns around. We can take the same form of radio is your mobile phone. That is giving that. So in a sense, the use of radio has changed. So many more people have access to have a radio-type device in their hand and have that communication using radio. And we have the World Wide Web, which is, be it a wired communications means, is also, at least it's getting people communicating. And it's a useful way of exchanging information around the world. It's changed the way that young people want to use communications tools.
You've put it very well, because Spectrum is used for mobile, and mobile is the popular use for people browsing on the Dart or the bus, and they're using it. Is there still that kind of old Spectrum limitation issue?
Spectrum is a challenge across the board, even now, but in a different way. I don't quite know what you're thinking of in terms of spectrum limitation, but there's always a case of finding new frequencies for things. As the years have gone by, we've seen the initial starting off around the 900 megahertz band for mobile telephony, moving from analog to digital, and then further frequency bands being added. And every time at ITU type conferences, there's always a look for more frequency bands, higher frequencies. At present, the big talking point in terms of frequencies to get for 5G, which is perceived to be Internet of Things data, lots of data being sent around the thing, around everywhere, high speed connectivity for everyone to their internet. Frequencies as high as 26 gigahertz are being put as sort of the norm, and where people are looking at, is there a possibility of, you know, 42 gigahertz, 60 something gigahertz, way up in that sort of realm. There's always a movement to try and find more frequencies to accommodate the kind of communication that people want to do. It may not be so much focused now on voice, it's maybe more focused on data using the IP formats, but taking even that as it stands, Wi-Fi, which was your sort of license exempt computer frequencies used back 20 years ago maybe, that's may be used with your smartphone now to enable Wi-Fi calling on certain phones and on certain networks, so that you don't necessarily have to have your cellular radio connection. You could perhaps use a local Wi-Fi network to connect to have your voice call. So in a sense, you can turn one to the other, but it's a different type of use. It's just marking how technologies are changing and ever changing all the time as the demands change.
Final question, is there a case to be made that when parts of the spectrum are deregulated, like Internet of Things in the 480 megahertz kind of thing, and there's, you know, a particular type of use, but you don't have to be licensed for it, is there a case to be made that advances radio because it gets to be used quite a lot without a lot of paperwork going into regulators?
There's a lot of calls for having unlicensed spectrum requirements will arise on regulatory authorities on a constant basis. The likes of PMR446, which was a UHF sort of walkie-talkie arrangement which everybody could get and use themselves, that is one version of it, but we've got the Wi-Fi bands, which started off initially at 2.4 gigahertz, 5 gigahertz. The people want more spectrum for that to enable this wireless connectivity for data. It's still a means of communication, and in terms of people who think radio and work radio, it is a form of radio. We just have to wait and see where it goes to. It's maybe not the same radio as we knew it 30, 40 years ago, but it is using radio, and that in itself, if you're in the technologies to build radio circuits, it's still something for you to be doing.
Okay, so I'll just finish with a comment and say that as radio is heading towards light and the rainbow frequencies, the future is bright for radio.
Well, it's a little while for radio to get quite towards light, but we're always looking upwards, and it may get there in the next 100 years. We'll see what another 100 years of radio can bring us.
Rory Henshey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Rory Hinchy ending our piece at the Coolmine Radio Rally for UNESCO World Radio Day 2018. And where amateurs think radio has a potential and a future. More details on World Radio Day at www.diamundialradio.org.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
In my head, I can picture amateur radio guys decoding that Morse. Next, we go to an interview with Mark O'Toole. Mark founded Radio Active, which is now trading as Easy Radio, but for most of his life has been charity radio. And a really interesting story how a life moment helped Mark see the need for a different kind of radio station.
Live 24/7 from Dublin, Ireland. This is charityradio.ie. Charity Radio.
Brian Green here at Charity Radio today, and the tables have been turned because normally Mark O'Toole, who's opposite me, would be presenting on the station, but today he's the interviewee. Hello, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I'm talking today about the genesis, the starting point, what bred life into charity radio, and you have one hell of a story, a personal story, going back to March 2012 One day, late in March 2012, something happened that changed your life. What was it?
Indeed it did. I had a stroke. That's the best way to put it. It's a factual thing. It happened to be at about 5 past 9, somewhere between 5 past and 10 past 9 in the morning. I was working away. I was making test phone calls on a new mobile network I was setting up. And I suddenly realized I couldn't understand myself. I had a really pronounced lisp. And it was really noticeable. And it, so much so that I had to finish what I was doing. And then when I tried to send an email after it, I just couldn't type. My right hand was just doing the most odd, bizarre things. So even that wasn't enough to tip me off. I knew something was not right, but I wasn't really aware that there was something majorly wrong. I don't know if that makes sense, but I kind of was in a kind of a hazy kind of state. And then I saw myself in the mirror and I realized the pieces came together. My face was entirely dropped on the left and I realized I had seen the FAST ad from the Irish Heart Foundation, and I realized it was the physical aspect of my face. And I thought, oh yeah, I can't smile. I tried to smile and I looked bizarre. I couldn't hear myself. I couldn't understand myself. I'm having a stroke.
The T in FAST is time.
Oh yes.
You were running out of time, but you had realized and you needed to then jump and seize this moment and do something fast. What did you next do?
Exactly. Straight to telehospital. Immediately to telehospital. And yes, time is absolutely vital. So once I got to telehospital and I explained, because my speech was getting quite bad, my blood pressure was very elevated, so I was really quite angry within myself as well. Once I managed to get the word stroke out of my lips, and it's more difficult than you might think at that stage. That's it. I was straight into the triage nurse. So I can't speak highly enough of telehospital for that, because they have an amazing awareness of and program for stroke. So went in, and that, the next, it was a little hazy for me, but my recollection is of many people coming to look at me and to see what my reactions were, etc. And then I saw Dr. Ronan Collins, who is the stroke consultant. And he was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. He actually showed me on the MRI where the stroke was, really treated me properly as an adult and showed me exactly what was happening.
This moment changed your life.
Oh, yeah, it did. Because on that day, because I hadn't been to a doctor in 20 years or more, they diagnosed me at the time as having the stroke, as having high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes. They thought I had cancer in the neck. So it was an interesting time, to say the least.
You had to go through recovery over the next few weeks after that?
Indeed, yeah. Well, the first feeling was euphoria. Yes, I've gotten over this. Because when you spend time in a stroke ward, you see what it can do. Horrible things it can do. So the first thing was euphoria, and then
they give you the kind of the medicine and the drugs to, and you yeah. suddenly get kind
a
of clot what do you
buster.
Think is back
clot
to normal.
Buster. Yeah, it's a clot buster drug that gets rid of all the clots.
But you're not really mended then, are you?
Well, see, it affects everybody differently. For me, it was speech and memory predominantly. There was no deficit. I could use my arms, my fingers, my toes. In fact, I was playing the guitar on that Wednesday in the hospital, in the cafe downstairs. So I thought I'd beaten this thing. I thought, yes, I've beaten it, because that was my personality. I was a very high achiever. And I thought, great, move on. So I didn't really tell anybody about this. The deficits really started to appear afterwards. You realize, things are wrong here. So, for example, watching a TV program, and in the ads during the TV program, you've forgotten the program you were watching. And then it's like rediscovering it again when the ads are finished. Like, ridiculous. It sounds ridiculous even to me. But, and it, I'd have to say it affects everybody differently. And I'm nothing but grateful for what I have. But you do, you mourn what you lost.
This moment in your life, kind of, you've had kind of this momentary recovery, but yeah. It wasn't permanent and you were feeling down about yourself. What
oh,
was
yeah.
that like?
Well, I suppose not to put too fine a point on it, I spent weeks in bed. I just gave up, just couldn't get myself started. Looking back, you know, it was completely depression, but I didn't. I'm not a person who sees things in that way. So one of the things that drove me was to help others. I've always done that. So I approached the Irish Heart Foundation and said, listen, guys, that fast TV ad really saved my bacon. Is there any way I can help? Because my background is corporate and commercial. So I thought, throw a few quid at them, it'd be great, I'll feel good about myself, etc. So kind of a, that's the way I viewed it. And they said, well, in fact, somebody passed away, left us a legacy, and that's how we could afford to put that TV ad you saw, which saved you. And that really opened my eyes, because I was thinking, my God, it really is that tight for funding and advocacy. And I asked the question, what can I do to help? Now, at that stage, I was very much overweight. I was at least 3 stone heavier than I am now. I said, what can I do to help? Because obviously just a few quid wasn't going to really do anything. I said, well, you can run marathons. I said, in this shape, I'm not running any marathons. Or you can shake tins outside supermarkets, etc. I thought, yeah, I'm happy to do that, but I think there's something else I can do. I had previously served as chairperson for Tala Community Radio, one of the first community radio stations in Ireland. And I had this brainwave idea, why don't I set up a radio station? And then because I was studying for an MBA, I thought, I'll research it. I'll treat this as a research project. And I couldn't see anything else like it. The closest I could see were shows on American radio stations dealing with charities, but no radio station set up entirely for it. And that was the start of Charity Radio. So I set it up on a laptop in my house, playing music and playing the Irish Heart Foundation FAST promo.
We've mentioned FAST a few times, and just before we go on and talk about Charity Radio, the F is for
face
and the A is for
arms
and the S is for
smile
or speech.
It's both, yeah. Both.
And the T we mentioned is
time.
Yeah, time.
When a stroke strikes, the damage spreads like a fire in the brain. But unlike fire, you can't see the damage. To spot the signs of a stroke, you have to act fast. F, face. Has their face fallen on one side? Can they smile? A, arms. Can they keep both arms raised? S, speech. Is their speech slurred? T, time. It's time to call 999 if you see any of these signs. The faster you act, the more of the person you save. When stroke strikes, act fast. Brought to you by the Irish Heart Foundation. For more, log on to stroke.ie.
And time you also had, and you said, okay, I'll make this radio station. And from very humble beginnings, you started. And it wasn't for the Heart Foundation, and it wasn't always going to be just about FAST. It seems to be about all charities and everything that they do.
It's an evolution. That's what it is. That's what Charity Radio exactly is. So at the start, I had this idea to help the Irish Heart Foundation. And then I had to think, because I was also suffering from diabetes, high blood pressure. So I thought, help them as well. And then I realized that most people in that sector were charities. Most people who gave out information and help were charities. So they're very much symbiotic. And they were all looking for money. They were all looking to get the message out. And I thought, what better way to do this than a radio station?
Then the radio station comes on air and, well, it's streaming online,
yeah,
and you gather more people together, but you go through a few format changes to get to where you are now.
Yeah, we started as a country and western radio station, believe it or not, because I thought an older demographic, we'd go for that. But it turned out I didn't have the level of knowledge that you need to make it a success. So, and I mentioned Tala Community Radio earlier. So that radio station had closed down a number of years ago, but I had kept in touch with a number of the presenters on that radio station. So they loved my story. They loved the idea. And as I mentioned, we're all volunteers. So they joined and they gave their time. And the radio station grew and grew and grew to the stage now we have two studios. And we broadcast 24/7. We broadcast specific shows for mindfulness, for small business, for charities. And yeah, we're and great music, obviously.
And you're global and worldwide. Have you plans to come on the radios in Dublin City?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so. What we're planning is a 30-day license. The BAI allow people on for 30 days. So we're planning to do that in Dublin, hopefully Q1 of 2016. Just trying to get the logistics together for that. And then moving forward from that, we look at DAB, we look at getting on the UPC channels, because I have to say UPC or Virgin as they are now, were really excellent to us at the start. And you have to remember, when I was setting up Charity Radio, I had no money. I had no contacts in broadcasting as such. So it was very much leveraging off my telecoms contacts. So, and people loved the story, loved the get up and go, because lots of people just give up. they just can't carry on. And that's really not me. And if we can help other people, well, that really is what we're here for.
If I have a magic wand and I could give it to you and you could, you know, change Charity Radio into what you want it to be, if I was to come back in 3 years' time, what would Charity Radio sound and look like?
I'd have to be honest and say, as regards format and the people, we're pretty much there, and the proposition. What we really need to work on are the audience. So find platforms that we can get on that attract more people to us. I suppose some public relations as well. Get the word out about the radio station and engage with the charities. So we would relocate to somewhere like the city centre in a small place where we can properly engage with the charities, go out and meet them at their offices. That's what I'd look for. So certainly FM would be fantastic if we get an FM license. If we can get on DAB, if DAB takes off in Ireland, or even in its current form where we have a couple of DAB multiplexes, or Sky, one of the Sky channels. So there are lots of ways, but really the first thing, in my view, is to get the proposition right. Get the people in, get the jingles, get the programming, get the music. And we're pretty much there. We've used the last year in getting our people in. Everyone are volunteers. We train them in-house for free. We get the music on here in really excellent quality. We've got excellent playback systems. We have an excellent sound. So we're pretty much there on that side. But you're really not helping people unless you've got an audience. So that'd be our biggest. So the two key things are bigger audience, greater interaction with the charities.
Last question. This project has been your baby and it's grown from humble beginnings to what it is now. Has it been your saviour?
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. Absolutely yes. Yeah. It's a win-win-win-win-win. I hate to think what could have happened to me if I hadn't had the radio station to get me back in to do things. So from a selfish perspective, yes, absolutely it has been a saviour to me. It has also opened my eyes about radio and broadcasting in this generation. It has opened my eyes to social media. It has brought a great bunch of people in here to work together as a radio station. I'm privileged to sit here with 25 or 26 people who love coming in here recording the shows. We've had Shay Healy in here giving his time for free, recording an ad for free for the Parkinson's Association, which we broadcast for free. You'll probably see a pattern emerging there. It's all for free. What we really need is a sponsor or two to help us make that, you know, that step change to, if you like, proper broadcasting to a larger audience. But to answer your question, yeah, absolutely, saviour.
Mark O'Toole, thanks for reversing the microphones today and letting me ask the questions to you. And thanks for your open and honest answers. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
You're very welcome.
Say hi. Mail hello at charityradio.ie or tweet at allcharityradio.
Mark O'Toole at the Easy Radio Studios, my thanks to him. That's about it for my edition of Wireless here on Flirt FM. John Walsh will be back in the seat next month. Best wishes to John recovering at home. Just to finish out maybe with some news, which I should have done at the start of the programme, I can tell you that Radio Reraw is on the air across Ireland and they are celebrating 10 years on the air. So Radio Reraw, 10 mlyna air on air. And they're available in Dublin on 105.2, in Galway on 87.7, in Cork on 106.7, and in Limerick on 105.5. 10 years on, well done to them. Radio Nova were having their fourth radiothon for Help Our Homeless, and the donations going to Focus Ireland. It had to be postponed on February 28th and March 1st, the two-day radiothon, because of the inclement and bad weather. Also, I can tell you that Christmas FM was due to come back to the, not to the airwaves, but to the internet on March the 1st. So with the snowfall, the clever guys up at Christmas FM said, well, if we can't have a white Christmas, we'll bring Christmas to March the 1st. And they came back online and on internet and Wi-Fi radios. And they were on from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with Christmas music. They're on all through the year with their multi-channels of Christmas music at christmasfm.com. the Irish Mirror reported that they were going to be broadcasting on their full set of frequencies around the country for March the 1st. Obviously, it wasn't April 1st, it was March 1st, but it was just a journalistic mistake. That's it from myself, Brian Green. It's been a pleasure and a hoot presenting wireless here on Flirt of M for the very first and possibly last time. Until we meet again somewhere on the radio, thanks for listening and stay tuned. Bye-bye.